This is Speaking of Writers. I'm Steve Richards. American Wings, Chicago's pioneering Black aviators, and the race for equality in the sky, from critically acclaimed author Sherry L. Smith and best-selling author Elizabeth Wien. This nonfiction account is the thrilling and inspiring, untold true story of the desegregation of the skies. American Wings follows a group of determined Black Americans who, with grit and resilience, battle powerful odds to build their own airfield on Chicago's South Side, create a flying club, and establish a school to train new pilots, teaching both Black and white students together, proving in a segregated time that integration was possible. Sherry Smith is the author of several novels for young adults, including the critically acclaimed The Blossom and The Firefly, Fly Girl, Orleans, and Pasadena, as well as the middle grade novel, The Toymaker's Apprentice. You can visit her on her website at sherrylsmith.com. Elizabeth Wien is a recreational pilot and the owner of about 1,000 maps, only 1,000 maps. She is the author of the number one New York Times bestseller, Codename Verity, as well as the novels Rose Under Fire, Black Dove, White Raven, The Pearl Thief, and The Enigma Game, as well as the nonfiction book, 1,000 Sisters, The Heroic Airwomen of the Soviet Union in World War II. She also has a website, Elizabeth Wien, WEIN.com. Happy to have both Sherry Smith and Elizabeth Wien join me now here on Speaking of Writers. Welcome to this program.
Thank you. It's great to be here. I'm talking to you from Scotland.
And, welcome.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, this is Sheree coming in from Los Angeles.
So American Wings, how did you guys discover this story?
We discovered it backhandedly by doing research for other books. We both independently, we discovered it. And I think that both of us were fairly fascinated by these characters. We'd used different characters in some of our fiction, and Sheree had actually written nonfiction about them in Who Were the Tuskegee Airmen. And I wanted to write about them, and I just finished writing 1,000 Sisters, and doing it all by myself had been really, really hard work. And I thought that Sheree would be a good person to partner with.
So I had written about Cornelius Coffey, just a very small, like a couple of lines about him in my novel Fly Girl, because the character in that book is a light-skinned Black woman who's looking to fly. She ends up passing for white to join the Women's Air Force Service pilots. But her plan in the beginning is to go to the Coffey School of Aviation because it's the place she's aware of that a Black person can learn to fly. And then when I wrote Who Were the Tuskegee Airmen, I remembered Coffey, and there's like a little sidebar about him and how he led eventually to training so many of the instructors that went on to train the Tuskegee Airmen. Whereas Elizabeth had written about John C. Robinson in her fiction in is it White Raven, Black Dove? I'm doing it backwards.
Black Dove, White Raven.
Black
and
Dove,
you know
White
what?
Raven.
I forgot. We've mentioned John C. Robinson and this fictional character I made up, whose name is Billy Cooper. But I keep forgetting that Teo, the hero in Black Dove, White Raven, ends up at the Coffey School as well.
See. So we both knew about it. And then when The Blossom and the Firefly was coming out, my editor and I reached out to Elizabeth to see if she would write some jacket blurb for the book. And my editor called me back and was like, she wants to talk to you. And that never sounds good to me. I was like, oh, we need to have a talk. But she wanted to know if I would team up with her on this. And, you know, that was literally an offer I could not refuse. It was too exciting. And I knew her work. And And so this is actually the first time I've ever teamed up with somebody on a book.
Same for me. It's the first time. I have written some academic papers with colleagues, but not a project like this that's going to be, you know, really scrutinized by the general public.
And by each other.
And by each other, yeah.
Right. What was that process like, writing with someone else?
Terrifying.
It started out well. We knew each other's work, and we'd had some Zoom calls, but we had not met in person until about 2 years, it must have been,
Into the project, yeah.
into the project. Yeah, and I think we spent most of those 2 years thinking that the other one, each thinking that the other one was working harder than we were. So getting together, we spent a week in Pennsylvania at my family's home, kind of hammering out what became the first draft of this book after we sort of pooled all our resources and our research. And actually meeting up in person gave us a much greater understanding of our different work habits. And it also made us realize that actually we were just as lazy or just as motivated as each other. It was not one of us working harder than the other. It was a big
Yeah,
relief.
I realized that, like, I'm a planner, and I outline and I plot things out. And Elizabeth is meticulous with the details, but she's much more free flowing. She's a what we call a
The
pantser, flying by the
pantser,
seat of her
yes,
pants.
of
Yeah.
course.
So,
Pantser, yes.
and I'm a plotter, and I think that's part of why we were worried that the other person was thinking that we were slacking, because we had such different writing styles, but at the end of the day, they really complemented each other. And when I flew out to meet Elizabeth in Pennsylvania, I remember one of my friends was like, "You don't think she's gonna murder you in the woods, do you?" And I was like, "Oh, I hadn't thought of that. This is a really elaborate plot to get rid of a fellow writer. I'm hoping
Brother.
no." And of course not, and it was wonderful. And it's funny because I know we had a lot of work to get through that week, but when I look back on it, I don't remember the work. I remember the good time we had.
And we did. I mean, we really balanced our work and play very well. And I had all these, sort of local things that I wanted to show Cherie, and we went canoeing and we went on hikes in the woods, and we came number one in the local pub quiz. So we had a
So
lot of
that was,
fun.
yeah, and that's what I remember, the giant crab cake balls and the Dutch pretzels and everything. Yeah. We should always write a book like that.
The opera
Yeah.
fudge. Remember the
The
opera
opera
fudge?
fudge. Have you
Yeah.
ever had opera fudge, Steve?
I never have. This all sounds great, though.
It's amazing. It's like this woman, she's probably the last woman on earth who knows how to make it, but it's like a little chocolate coated, smooth, creamy. I can't even describe it. It's so
It's
good.
extremely local to Lebanon County, Pennsylvania.
Sounds wonderful, though.
It is.
Yeah. So, Chicago at this time period, during this time period, what is going on? World War II is approaching. So, what is happening in Chicago?
Where to start? I mean, things are happening in Chicago that are happening all over the United States, but what inspires our group of people, these four aviators that we kind of focused on, and the other people that they are flying with and teaching to fly and organizing groups with, what's really driving people at the moment is that as we're approaching World War II, the government has decided it needs to train more pilots. It needs to train civilian pilots to have them ready to already know how to fly should they need to train fighter pilots. So they're putting together a bunch of aviation bills, and one of these is for a civilian pilot training program, and there is no provision in it for training Black aviators. So what our group get very excited about is lobbying, as is everybody else in the US, but our group in particular decide that they're going to do something about it and try to push this bill through Congress with a specific detail in it that will make sure that Black people are allowed to engage in the program as well as everybody else, or as well as white people.
So the aviation industry is growing, right? Like it's only what, about 30, 40 years old at this point. And it's the next frontier. And African Americans have been treated as second class and third class citizens on the ground, but they see this opportunity in the sky for more equality. And that is a door that is quickly closing as the rise of the civilian pilot training program seems determined to shut them out. The US military back in 1921, I think it was, had commissioned a study about the use of black manpower in the military. And based off of whatever their hocus pocus decisions, they came to the study comes to the conclusion that Black American men are not brave or smart enough to be useful in a military situation. So they're not smart enough to fly. They're not smart enough to serve, despite the fact that they've been serving with distinction since the dawn of this nation and had served with great distinction in World War I. So, like the we're in the middle of that period after World War I. This group of soldiers that served in France, the Harlem Hellfighters, African Americans who were in the field longer than anybody else, served with distinction, were honored by the French for their service more so than the Americans. They come back to the United States. There's a big parade on Fifth Avenue in New York, and they march up the street. And for the first time, white Americans are seeing black men marching in lockstep with guns they know how to use and combat experience. And rather than celebrate the glory of our nation, who's just won this war, it turns into the Red Summer, where they attack veterans, black veterans, and black communities, displacing hundreds of households, murdering people in the streets. Even in Washington, D.C., one reporter recounted seeing people killed near the steps of the Capitol. And so now there's this sense of terror. People had gone to war, African Americans had gone to war thinking to prove themselves as equals in the United States and come back to be beaten for it. And so in that hurt and confusion, you have a few things happening. The Harlem Renaissance is born because some African Americans are like, maybe art is the answer. We can show the world what we're really made of with our creative side. And then you have the, I guess it's like it's a steam movement, really, right? Because then the science and technology people are like, we can fly. What can you do to show your worth? I can fly, and I'm gonna, if only they'll let me. And so it is in the midst of all that that like Cornelius Coffee meets John C. Robinson, and they come to Chicago, and they meet a whole group of people that they move forward in training to achieve that dream.
And I think it's worth pointing out that flying at this time was this whole like cool grassroots thing where people were coming up with fixes, they're building their own planes, they were, tying everything together with string. Quite a few African Americans who couldn't get flight training any other way because no white people would train them, ended up sort of saying, well, I'm going to do my own thing, I'll build my own plane. And one of them in Pennsylvania was allowed to fly at an airfield that was mostly run by white people, but no one would teach him. So he basically taught himself. He'd rev up the engine and the plane would take off a little bit and he'd fly a little bit and he'd land. He ended up in a tree. But eventually they were kind of like, okay. And that's a similar thing happened to our people, to Cornelius Coffee and John Robinson, where they this is actually a very long story, but to cut to the chase, the flight school where they applied would not let them in, and they built their own plane. And eventually, because it took off, they said, we got to teach these people to fly. If we don't, they're gonna teach themselves. You might want to go into more detail than that, Sherry.
Say is what I think is amazing about that twist, and it's the same thing with the story you were telling. I think you were talking about Charles Chief
Alfred
Anderson,
Anderson, yeah.
is that at a certain point, an aviator's passion And the evident passion for these fledgling aviators overcame race. And they were like, these guys have what it takes and they're determined. Let's do this thing. And I think that's amazing, is that like what, when you talk about how you identify, you know, do I identify, what race do you identify, what gender do I identify? And like what this book really shows, I think, and the story of these people really shows, is that at a certain point, all identifications fell away with the exception of I'm a flyer. And then that
that's
allowed,
really true.
Yeah.
You know, and then that really allowed women, people
yep.
of all different races to join in the air.
Let's talk about some of the other characters here. You mentioned Cornelius Coffey and Johnny Robinson, the skilled auto mechanics. Janet Harmon Bragg and Willa Brown. Talk about those two folks.
Go for it, Cherie.
Okay. Well, so we'll start with Janet. Janet Harmon Bragg was from Georgia, where she trained to be a nurse. And she left the South. She had a big, loving family down there, but she left the South because she was working in a hospital where Black people were treated in the basement, and they were not treated with the same care. And she did not want to stand by and watch patients die because white doctors were not giving them the same level of care. So she intervened where she could, and then she finally had enough. And she moved up north, stayed with friends, eventually ends up in Chicago on her own, and she gets a good job. And so she becomes the bank, in a way, for our intrepid group of aviators, because she's the one with the, quote, real job. And one day she's walking down the street and sees a billboard that says, "Birds learn to fly, why can't you?" And that sparks something in her. She does, she starts flipping through the newspaper, and lo and behold, Johnny Robinson and Cornelius Coffey are offering a class because they have graduated finally with distinction from their aviation mechanics course. And to the point that the head of the school says to them, "If you think there are other Black people who want to learn to fly, will you teach the class?" And so they did. They put the word out in the community. Janet ends up there the first day. It's twice a week at night, and she is the only woman in this classroom. And so she starts to experience the same disregard that Johnny and Coffey had experienced, being the only Black people in their all white class. But Johnny and Coffey won people over by being the most brilliant people in class. Janet won people over by not quitting. And she had money, so she had the best tools in the room. People would want to borrow them, and she'd say no. but she held her own, and eventually that held the door open for other women to come in, including Willa Brown. Although Willa was lured in by the devastatingly handsome Johnny Robinson.
So Willa, her family actually left the South when she was pretty young, and she grew up in Indiana, in Terre Haute. And she went to business school in what's Indiana University now, and she was teaching, and she got involved with a young man who was a teacher at another high school, and they were visiting her family for Mother's Day in, I think it was 1934, and had a terrible car accident, probably with Willa driving, and he was killed, and she was very, very badly injured. And while she was just kind of like resting and getting her life back together, she was working at a lunch counter at the drugstore, where it just so happened that Johnny and Coffey and their crowd hung out when they were in between flights. And that's how she got involved with the very debonair Johnny Robinson. He said, "Well, I'll teach you to fly." And she took lessons from him initially, and she also enrolled in the class that they were teaching, that Coffey and Johnny were teaching. And at the more she became involved in their club, she wasn't the one who was able to provide them with a plane like Janet did, but she provided business acumen, and she was the one who began to advocate when they needed to, push the envelope in Washington. She was the one who wrote to senators and indeed wrote to the first lady and talked to people and did money raising for them, even if she wasn't supplying it themselves. So she really was sort of the brains behind the whole organization, not in terms of, they all had brains, but in terms of what did Coffee say about her? I'll put it this way. I've never seen anyone with finer business sense, something
Really
like
say
that.
like Willa is the business brains, Janet is the money, and Johnny is the flair, and Coffee is the steady base. That's how they come across, and like they made a great team in that respect. Willa also was beautiful. She looked like Lena Horne, and the other guys weren't shabby, but she looked like
No,
Lena
they
Horne,
weren't, but
and
Willa's drop dead
she's
gorgeous.
stunning, and she knew how to work it. And so when they were looking for publicity, she puts on an all-white flight suit, the jodhpurs and the white jacket and the goggles, and she strides into the offices of the Chicago Defender newspaper, the largest black newspaper at the time, and says, "I want to talk to someone about a show we're putting on." And every man in the room, his jaw drops. It just happens that one guy was the first to jump up and say, "Have a seat," and that was Enoch Waters, and he went on to help promote and publicize not just our group, but Blacks in Aviation, and then the stories would go out on the news wire, and so the whole nation would be apprised of what was going on. Something that is also interesting about this time period is this is during the heart, if not the height, of the Great Migration, as you could tell from the stories of all of our characters sort of moving up from the South. So you had a lot of people flooding into major cities like Chicago, looking for opportunity, and then making opportunity where there was none. And so that is sort of the energy of the wave that these guys are riding on as they pursue aviation.
Research sources and materials for this book and your research process. Did Janet and Willa, did they keep diaries? It sounded like they wrote letters to what, to Congress, but.
Willa's letters to Congress are pretty much the voice of Willa. There's no diary that I'm aware of, although there may be one hiding somewhere. And she did not write an autobiography, but Janet did produce a memoir.
Basically, I mean, that's the hard thing. So when you're doing these sort of hidden histories, there are people out there who believe that everything they say, do, and think is important. And so they journal it their whole lives, and then they give it to some museum or archive or whatever because they know they're important. And you don't see that as much in African American communities. And so what we have, Janet fortunately did write a little autobiography with a woman named Marjorie Kriz called Soaring Above Setbacks. But I could not, she has some things in, she retired to Arizona. So she has some things in archives there, but it's not a lot. It's mostly other material. So we get Janet's voice a lot from her autobiography, and she ran a news column in the Chicago Defender. So we get some of her voice from that. Cornelius Coffee, his brother was a train porter, and he was part of the Brotherhood of Train Porters, and he was a person of note. And so he donated family papers to the University of Kansas in Lawrence. And so there's a Coffee family archives because he's a person of note. His son was a person of note. His son actually, so it's Vernon Coffee, Vernon Coffee Jr. Vernon Coffee Jr. Was a military man. He actually was the general that carried the president's football for Richard Nixon. So they have this long line of family service, and then his sister. So there are archives there with family photos, and you get little glimpses of Willa from letters she's exchanged with Vernon. But interestingly, very little in Coffee's papers about Willa,
Yeah, that is
even
interesting.
though they were married for a time.
So we also have interviews that the Smithsonian made in the 1990s when most of these people were still alive. And they didn't interview Willa, but they did interview Janet and Coffey. So we are able to see them, you know, sort of animatedly talking and getting excited about what they did. And that is a real treasure. Those are not available on the internet, but they're available if you ask. They are very happy to share these. And for Johnny, he for a period was he went to Ethiopia in the 1930s, something that all our aviators were hoping to do, and that Black aviators throughout the United States were very anxious to help out as Mussolini invaded Ethiopia in 1935. And Johnny was pretty much the only Black American who was invited out there. And he ended up flying the emperor around kind of as his personal chauffeur. And he was essentially sponsored by Claude Burnett, who originated the Associated Negro Press. And so we have these, and Burnett sent him out as a correspondent under the guise of a correspondent. And he had a fake pen name that he wrote under, Wilson
He wasn't
Jayne.
allowed to be there as a combatant.
Yeah.
The government had a neutrality clause and were like, they wouldn't approve anybody else to go, actually.
Right. So what we have Johnny's voice comes through because he and Claude Burnett had a lot of wrote a lot of letters to each other. And so we can kind of put together a narrative based on those. And he maintained that correspondence with Burnett after he returned from Ethiopia. So up into the 1940s, he's still corresponding with him. And he does, his voice is definitely a very strong one. He's not the most literary guy. He is college educated. He graduated from Tuskegee Institute with an auto mechanics degree. But he writes the way you would expect a person to talk. He's very colloquial in his writing, and he doesn't mince his words. So that is it is a real pleasure to read, you know, because it just feels like he's so there when you see this stuff.
In our
The thing I
remaining
would
moments
say,
here, oh, go ahead,
oh, I'm
Shri.
so sorry. No, I was just going to say the thing I say that I think is interesting is that these are everyday people, but the letters that we have from them are because they were reaching out to their government representatives at a level that I don't think people would think to do today. I wouldn't think I need help with my club. I'm going to write the first lady. So I think that's really interesting that their connection with citizenry was really strong.
This is a fantastic story. It's American Wing, Chicago's pioneering Black aviators in the race for equality in the sky, from critically acclaimed author Cherie Smith and Elizabeth Wien. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you. Been a
Thank you
pleasure.
very much. It's
And
been
this
fantastic.
is Speaking of Writers.